Indigenous Earthlings, here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into another Express Yourself from the left side of the Great Divide. I'm Luke Nessler, and that was Tony Furtado with his song Kentucky Strip Mine. And Tony plays next Wednesday, no, excuse me, Tuesday night at Steve's Guitars, and if we're lucky, we'll get him in studio here at KD&K sometime on Tuesday afternoon. Always nice to see Tony in our town. The 37th Annual Valley Visual Arts Show opened 2 weeks ago and will hang until February 17th. The Valley Visual Arts Show features 50 Roaring Fork Valley artists and includes two- and three-dimensional work in a wide variety of media. And one of those artists is with us now, Chris Hassig. Chris Hassig is an artist, printmaker, and writer who grew up in Carbondale. He creates, among other projects, detailed semi-abstracted drawings of grass that accrete to form simple geometries, layered meditations on strata and horizon, and fictional maps of an invented country. And the piece Chris has in the Valley Visual Show is called Hakatai, which is an ink, charcoal, graphite, and watercolor on paper piece. Chris, welcome.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm great. Yeah, how are you?
Good. I took a look at your piece this afternoon over at the launch pad, and you were right. It's a lot of strata, and you and it looks different from far away than it does up close, which I gather is sort of a signature property of your work.
I guess so, yeah. It's, you know, it comes from working really closely, so usually when I'm creating it, I'm experiencing it up close, and then sort of getting away from it is the surprise for me, oftentimes, in the process, I'll be stepping back and forth. So,
also, you're not constantly are you working on an easel?
No, it's on a desk.
On a desk. So yeah. You're not stepping back and...
Well, I am occasionally, but... Uh-huh. But just, yeah, I don't know. You can't necessarily control what it's going to end up being.
Well, I can attest to the grass pieces being marvels of complexity when you look at it up close. Chris, your website, chrishassig.com, that's HASSIG.com, and you have a lot of your grass pieces up there. Do you remember the first time you did a grass piece? Were you out there in the front yard on your hands and knees looking at the grass?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. I was in college, actually, and I was doing... I think I was doing some more studio-based work in a specific class, and I went outside to kind of take my mind off of that, and I just did this tiny postcard-sized piece. And then that sort of kicked around my drawer for a while, and then I think a year or two later, I made a little bit bigger one, and then at a certain point, I decided it was kind of intriguing to me. So, yeah, that's kind of where I got going.
Interesting. the piece that's at, that's hanging is not a grass piece over there at the launch pad, but it's very intricate, just as intricate in its own way. How long did it take you to make that piece that's hanging there? How much time do you have invested in these things?
It kind of depends, you know. That one actually happened fairly rapidly because I did a number of earlier drawings this summer where I was sort of working out the process of making it. And that one happened, I think, within a week, basically, because I kind of knew what I wanted to do and had a pretty good direction. What takes a lot of time is trying to figure out what you're doing or wrestling with new media or new subject matter and trying to figure out how that works well for you.
So are you one of those artists that goes through many drafts of a piece before you get to the one that you like?
I would say I work in series, so I will do many drafts of a sort of a piece, but each one hopefully has... I spend a lot of time on them, so I hope that they are... Usually there's, yeah, failure or two at the beginning, but then I figure out sort of what works for me, and then I can usually pull it off every time. But each one is obviously has a new layer or a layer removed or something is different about it that's makes it unique. So,
what is it about layers that attracts you?
I don't know. I mean, I think maybe it has something to do with obviously an element of time involved in my work. And so maybe that's kind of a rehashing of that thought or something like that. And the layering for the strata ones, it was just a way of sort of organizing the drawing in a way that by working within sort of a little bit of a stricter, a framework that would kind of control it. It sort of allowed me to sort of organize what otherwise would be just sort of unbelievable cacophony. I don't know.
Well, that's the thing about complexity, isn't it? I mean, you get up close with it and you kind of get overwhelmed by it, but then when you're kind of far away from it, you can kind of make sense. But then it's kind of irresistible, isn't it, to kind of dig in and dive in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that sort of tension is what I'm looking for a lot of times.
Interesting.
And, yeah.
Huh. And do you think, what have you discovered in that process of just in and out and around and through? And, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, these strata ones are really fun for me because I'm still, with the grass drawings, I was dealing with much more of sort of a literal subject matter and... sort of trying to capture a specific visual symbol or something like that in each part of the drawing that I was drawing. Whereas with these strata ones, it's much more abstract. And so it's a lot more of kind of, it's a little bit more mystical or something of kind of going through the process and seeing what happens That one's actually sort of one of the flatter drawings of this series, but a lot of them sort of end up evoking horizon lines or sort of weather patterns or strata, or they're all these sort of things that come out of them that are sort of just, you know, your associations from your mind, but it's fundamentally abstract, so it's kind of a, I don't know.
Interesting.
I'm not sure if that...
I think that makes sense. You know, one of the things when you're talking about strata that I think of in the natural environment anyway are clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the strata that I saw on the one that's hanging at the launch pad and also on your website are very reminiscent of clouds.
Mm-hmm.
Are clouds a subject matter that attracts your artistic eye?
I'm not sure. I'm pretty agnostic as to specific subject matter. The grass I sort of stumbled into, and I can sort of in retrospect rationalize maybe what I like about them, but I like nature in general. I think it's impossible to live in the Western Colorado and not be sort of constantly inspired by nature, even though I'm taking it to a much more a fairly studio bound, unnatural. It's not obviously pictures of Mount Sopris or Red Hill or something like that, but hopefully maybe capturing something of that same spirit, or I don't know.
Well, I think it does, because there's one of the things that occurred to me as I was looking through your website was as above, so below, you know, and that is to say that as above is the long view.
Uh-huh.
So from the long view, it looks simple.
Uh-huh.
And then you dive in, uh-huh, and you discover more complexity, and then you dive in a little further, uh-huh, and there's more and more, and it just keeps going. It's like it's like Alice in the rabbit hole.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely a certain fractal quality to some degree in some of my work, or I wouldn't say it's not fractal in the sort of cliched way that people would associate that with, in terms of artwork that's like that, but... definitely the kind of, yeah, I don't know, the sort of similarities of distance and closeness that you can sort of find with similar patterns at different levels. I don't know. And the sort of the maps are kind of, you know.
Well, let's talk about the maps. You've been working on a map project since your teenage years.
Yeah.
And are you still working on that? And maybe you could describe to our listeners what that is.
yeah, I've been. It kind of goes on in the background, I would say, at this point. I worked on it a fair amount as a sort of like a secret nerd hobby all through. All through high school and college and stuff like that, and it was just something that I really loved doing, and but it ended up giving rise to my art because I became very facile with pencil and drawing because I was drawing so much all the time. I sort of developed a weirdly specific style of drawing that's super complicated and technical and kind of architectural. That's based on this vocabulary of maps and whatnot. And so, yeah. And then, yeah, so that's sort of a slow boiling pot that's off to the side that I kind of keep working on. And I had a major, I went to Europe last year and had a major sort of fun time writing on the trains in Italy. and so I started writing about the capital city of this fictional country that I had invented, and which I have a lot of information stored in my head about it, but it's sort of mundane Wikipedia style information, and so this was like trying to figure out a way to be a little bit more narrative about it and give people a way to narratively enter into the map in a way that was more opened up and welcoming and kind of allowed people to have empathy for the map or something.
Is it allegorical at all? Is it sort of like a map into Chris Hassig's mind?
I mean, it's got to be because it's, you know.
Is it?
I mean, that's unavoidable, I think.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that was my intention. It was just,
right.
It was originally, and it still continues to be, kind of fairly unimaginative in a funny way of very, very sort of strictly adhering to the laws of physics and sort of human behavior. And, but then there are little flights of utopianism.
It's not dystopia, but
it's
utopian.
Not dystopian.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's slightly utopian, but not in that clean sort of fascist way.
Oh, okay, so there's a little political slant that I hadn't considered, but that kind of makes sense.
I would say it's utopian in the sort of embracing a messiness of that. Maybe that is utopia. is very sort of multicultural or something, so I don't know.
Well, one of the things that struck me about strata pieces that you're doing now, is that still your current theme, more or less?
Yeah, that's what I've been working on. What I'm working on right now is trying to figure out how to do them on gessoed panel as opposed to on paper. And that's tricky because the watercolor and charcoal don't work very well, or they act in very odd ways on the panel. But the panel allows you to sand things off or cut through it with a stylus, and you can create this really cool palimpsestic kind of give and take with the painting in a way that the paper just can't hold up against that kind of abuse.
Interesting. Well, I was going to say that I'm seeing color now.
Yeah.
And so you're starting to bring color into the...
Yeah, thing. The colors get more vibrant on the panel too, so which is kind of interesting. So.
Huh. And do you see yourself working in oils at some point, or are you happy with watercolor, at least for now?
I don't know. We'll see.
So it doesn't sound like you've pre-planned your artistic unfolding.
No, it's kind of like you take one. I mean, I think everybody's this way. You take one step and then you say, oh, and something unexpected happens. And, you know, whenever I try to really rigidly plan something out, it's usually disappointing. But if you sort of leave yourself open to trying all these different pathways and then seeing what speaks to you, then take that next step down that and another branch opens. And
nice.
Can be kind of overwhelming at times to think about all of the different possibilities that you'll never have time to do, but
well, I guess that's
sort of something.
That's partly where the art is yeah. discovering your possibilities.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the art isn't even taking place on what you're working at. It's in your head, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
What are your creative processes? Do you work every day on your art? And if so, how long?
I haven't been doing much this last month. I've been skiing like a madman.
Well, that's understandable.
Everybody should be out there. It's been unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'd say this has been one of my least productive months probably in a long time. I tend to work in very intense sort of modes of sort of... I try to work... I start feeling antsy and weird and uninspired or something, or sort of lethargic if I'm not working on something, you know, if I'm letting everything just lie around for too long, it starts making me crazy. So I do work on a pretty regular basis, but I would say I work in pretty intense sort of blocks of time where I'll just spend the entire day on something, or you know, just spend a whole stretch of time working really meditatively on a pattern or something like that.
With the pieces you're working on now, you know, inevitably an artist has to solve problems, whether they're technical or, I don't know, psychological maybe.
Yeah.
But what kind of problems are you solving? What kind of problems are you finding in this current process that you're in, and how are you solving those?
Interesting. Let me think. I guess I'm trying to, I mean, I think it is, a lot of it is about that finding that, that balance between chaos and over controlling is kind of, I feel like I'm oftentimes tiptoeing that line of trying to let this sort of like looseness into the work and that kind of thing. But also, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It's very much a question of personal visual taste and what appeals to me. And so a lot of times it's sort of, you have to jump into a blank piece of paper and draw something, and then that can be sometimes the hardest part, because then you respond to that and you sort of, then your eye can sort of start critiquing what you're doing, and then it's kind of a give and take with the composition and your idea of what the composition should be. And so that's kind of my process right now.
Interesting. Do you have a studio space separate from your living space here in town?
No, I have a single room studio living space. That's pretty marginal, but It's good. Yeah, if I couldn't do oil paintings for sure at this point, because I would kill myself with poisonous gases or something. But but drawing is pretty clean, so I can do that.
Well, I know a couple years ago you had a confluence of shows. You had one happening in Aspen. Your gallery, Nugget Gallery, is that where you're represented?
Well, Nugget Gallery is kind of defunct at this point. It's now the Gonzo Gallery took over that space, and so yeah, I'm currently galleryless, but that's one of my projects for the spring, is hopefully
find a gallery,
go down to Denver or find a gallery here.
Well, I see you had a show in Denver recently.
Yeah, I did. It was a fun pop-up show I did in a space on Santa Fe Drive, and it was great just because it's kind of like First Friday here, where there's just a lot of foot traffic and it's fun to talk to people, and sold some stuff, so it was good.
And you've done some residencies. You did one at Anderson Ranch.
Yeah, that was good. That was really printmaking focused, and I worked on the map a fair amount in that thing. But that was kind of cool because I'm pretty coming out of the wilderness a little bit and out of left field into this art scene, in terms of not having gone to art school and not having the formal kind of steps that you take to get to being an artist. But I got to hang out for 10 weeks with all of these people who are really well versed in that, or are coming from different ages or countries or disciplines, and so that was just the melting pot at there was just totally fantastic, and we had such a fun time together.
Oh, that's great. That's good to hear. Well, I know Anderson Ranch is formative for a lot of artists.
Yeah, it's it's a special place. It's got such great vibes, and the community and the focus on the art making, that sort of twin purpose there is, it was really good. Cool.
So is that constituting your formal art education? Are you self-taught pretty much?
Yeah, I would say mostly, except I also did this, I guess you call it a residency. It was kind of an apprenticeship in Boston, outside of Boston, with some family friends who are printmakers. And so that was sort of where I learned the copper plate etching techniques and stuff like that. And also took care of a man who was an oil painter, and helped his wife, who was also an oil painter. So I learned a fair amount about that whole discipline and did some painting with them, with models and stuff coming in every day. So that was pretty interesting.
Well, this show that's hanging over at the launch pad right now, the Valley Visual Art Show, is this your first Valley Visual, or have you been in...
No,
others?
I think I won the People's Choice in 2011 or something.
Nice.
That was the only one I managed to get my act together for. yeah, I think that was 2011. I had two pieces in that one, I think. But yeah, it's good to be back in it, and it's such a great group of great community, and yeah, it's so fun to be just sort of involved at the launch pad and stuff.
Yeah. One of the centers for art making in this town.
Kind of like Katie and Kay. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, the best of luck to you in your gallery search. That's a big deal. That's a big step.
Yeah. I gotta get on that. So
go skiing first. Gone skiing.
Luckily, we have a dry spell coming in, so hopefully get some work done.
You can put a little thing on the easel and paint "Gone Skiing." Oh, I created some art today. No problem.
Yeah, some good tracks down the dumps or something.
Well, that's artistic. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris Hasig, thanks for coming in and talking about your art with us.
Yeah, thanks, Luke.
It's great. Stay with us. More to come on Express Yourself. We're back. It's 4:38, and this is Katie and Kay. It's the Express Yourself Show. Thank you for listening. Joining the program now is another of the featured Valley Visual Show artists, Sarah Yule. Sarah is a commercial and fine artist based in Carbondale who harnesses her love of the wild places and her desire to propel human connection as a means to motivate her imaginative works. And Sarah's piece in the Valley Visual Show is called Mount Sopris, and it's in watercolor and ink. Sarah, welcome.
Hi, Luke. It's such a pleasure to be on Katie and Kay.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. Nice, bright face and smile, and an artist to boot. And we get to sit here and talk about art.
You know, the reason I'm an artist is because I have a brim hat on, right?
Well, you look like an artist. That's a good thing. Yeah, did that take a lot of practice?
You got to start somewhere, you know.
Is that hard to do, or was it easy for you?
To start wearing brim hats?
To be an artist.
I think it was something I had to step into throughout my life. I've always thought of myself as an artist, but to really go for it and to pursue it as a career and also a language of how I want to be in the world was something that has happened for me more recently, even though as a kid I thought of myself as an artist.
That's a brave thing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What brought you up to that point, to where you said, screw it, I'm going to do it?
I think a lot of things, but one of them really was this desire for knowing how I want to make a difference in our world or how I want to contribute to it or express myself in a way that's bigger than myself, and slowly getting more comfortable with art being a voice for that just started to make more and more sense.
Interesting. Interesting. I saw your website, sarahyuhl.com. That's Sarah with an H, SARAHUHL.com. Great picture of you sitting on the ground in Red Rock Country, somewhere in Utah, I guess, with all your watercolors spread out in front of you and a tablet. Is that how you work? You go out there and you're painting?
The best days, that's how I work.
Okay.
That was a really great trip with a friend of mine. We camped overnight up underneath Castleton Tower and woke up with the sun, and I painted the whole desert landscape, Castle Valley, right as the sun came up.
Wow. That's a special time.
It was a delight. And that was really the beginning of the art that I'm doing now. That was a little less than a year ago. And ever since then, I've started to paint outside, plein air style. And I feel like that's where my most inspired work is coming from.
So the piece at the launch pad, the Mount Sopris, that was painted plein air.
I painted that at my desk, actually.
Well, you have a desk looking at Mount Sopris.
I do.
How good is that?
You know, that one, I did have to get myself a little bit of a photo reference for that. There's so many views of Sopris, and so it was a really fun research project to look through different angles and different perspectives of the mountain, and I really like that one. I'm also dealing with the fact that it's a winter. I did take my paints up to the top of Highlands Bowl over the weekend, and they actually froze. So I was tough enough, but I felt like I was racing the maybe if I took my jet boil and boiled some water so that I could keep my paint water cold or warm enough.
Wow, how about that?
I do miss painting outside, though. It's different to paint indoors, and I can still create work and do a lot of my commercial work inside, but ever since, you know, I've found myself making these pieces out right next to the mountain, it's hard to replicate that.
So I imagine it's kind of hard painting snow in watercolor. I'm trying to picture that. How would you do that technically?
That's where I get to let my imagination drive the ship.
Oh.
So I use a lot of imaginary elements in my work, and so that's where colors that aren't necessarily on the landscape come in. But I also like negative space. It has been a challenge. I feel very challenged by drawing or painting snow.
Huh. Yeah, I could see where that would be. Maybe not as difficult as water. I don't know. Running water, maybe.
We're going deep, aren't we?
I guess so. I imagine it's pretty hard painting flowing water in watercolor.
It's all about the light. You know, and how the light touches it. And for me, my work is also how I experience a place. So I like to paint the experience that I'm having when I'm sitting there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's like very joyful. And so that's where color that maybe isn't quite in the mind's eye comes out in the painting.
Okay. Well, let's describe the piece that's at the launch pad. It's, I would say it's a little on the muted side, color-wise, although there's some really nice purple washes in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that piece was cool because I used these new paints from a wonderful little company called Greenleaf and Blueberry. It's a couple that just moved to Grand Junction, and they started making their own paints out of natural elements. And I used a paint that has graphite in it. And maybe if you look closely enough, you could see that the whole painting kind of sparkles.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that because I didn't notice the sparkling in the purple, but I noticed it in the gray.
Yeah, it's the graphite paint, and it's really cool. They're a wonderful team. They're making these paints out of all natural elements, and they educated me quite a bit. I don't know much about my materials. A lot of times I kind of feel like a hack. I didn't go to art school, and I'm just using junky paints because I don't really feel like that's where the beauty and the work comes from. You know, it comes from inside of you. But these are really cool new paints.
Huh, how did you discover them?
They found me. We kind of like found each other through like social media, which is this really funny universe where people are connecting. And it oftentimes feels a little like shallow in the beginning because you're just like looking at a screen, talking to somebody else on their screen. But they actually came through Carbondale, and we went and had coffee at True Nature, and they're actually sponsoring me, which is really cool. I have a paint sponsor.
How about that?
I know. How about that?
That's really cool. Well, I noticed on your website that you sell cards and calendars, and I was a little surprised to see that cards are still popular, but I guess they are. I kind of asked around and discovered that there's still a real market for cards.
I think so. You know, and I'm definitely not supporting myself on card sales, but around the holidays, I definitely have an outlet for them, and I do feel like people still like a tactile outlet for connecting every once in a while.
I think you're right. I noticed that with the DJs at KD&K. Most of them prefer the hard copy CD. You know, they can get all they want in Spotify and digital realms, but there's something about a hard copy CD, just as there is with a record album.
Yeah, and we all get so many emails all day long, and we're looking at our phones, and I do feel more and more people are wanting a different outlet here and there.
One of the things you do is story maps. Can you describe what a story map is?
I can, yeah. It was so wonderful to listen to Chris talk about his imaginative country. Story maps, for me, are just pictorial demonstrations of a place, or it could be of an adventure, or it could be a mission for an organization. And really, I think of them as legend and lore. The maps that I make are not very geographically accurate. It's not necessarily how to find your way, but it's how to feel a place or how to comprehend. I work with a lot of nonprofit organizations that are trying to connect with a demographic that needs to know about this great work they're doing, perhaps for conservation. And so the map is focused on plants or animals or areas that need attention, or just the wonderful things we want to celebrate about a place. I did a map of Carbondale for the Chamber of Commerce, and, you know, it's all of these things that we love about our home.
Huh. Mushroom Rock, Mount Sopras, the rivers.
Dandelions, deer.
Dandelions. How about that? Was there a roundabout with a sculpture in the middle?
There was.
I didn't notice that. I'll have to look more closely at that. And I guess I gather that's sort of your artistic bread and butter.
The maps, yes, for sure. And it's where I'm really like striving for, especially in this coming year. I'm working really hard to connect with different groups that need help telling their story and that are pushing hard in a conservation angle. For me, that's the most satisfying work I could attract right now.
Uh-huh. And the idea being to express their work in artistic terms, in paint.
Well, it doesn't have to be that they want to do it in an artistic way. It's just that they want to connect with people in another way, you know, not a PowerPoint, not a website, not a press release. You know, maybe it's something that people are going to learn from, but also perhaps put on their wall. It's really about connection more than anything.
Okay. Okay. Huh. And you're producing what for these clients? Are you producing
legend and lore, Luke?
But how can you sell a legend? That's the key question, isn't it?
So, you know, every one of these map projects I've had has been custom, and a lot of it is sitting down and discussing what the goals are for the organization or the town or what have you, and really coming up with an end product that's going to help them tell their story. So each one's kind of different. I just did a map for Aspen Skiing Company. It's going to be for the World Cup coming up in March.
Oh.
And so that I produced two maps for them. One is of town, and there's cute little things in it, like the horse and buggy and the ice skating rink and, you know, the gazebo in one of the parks. And it's also a tool to tell people what venues are where. And then there's also another map of the mountain with the race course on it.
There's some racing history on that mountain.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. Did you get Bill Johnson careening down the slope?
Maybe if you look hard enough.
Okay. And, of course, the original big ski race in the United States, 1950, the FIS Championships.
Yep.
Huh. And you embodied some of that in your piece?
Yeah, that's the other piece that I love about these maps is they're research projects. Uh-huh. And oftentimes I get to meet with really cool people that are influential in a place or a piece of the history or, you know, somebody that has an element of a place that needs to be told through story.
Hmm. Huh. Where do you see your art career going, Sarah Ewell?
Well, my hope is that it keeps me painting in the wild places. For me, it's definitely a marriage of where I want to be and how I want to spend my time, which is outdoors in the mountains, and also making ripple effects. It's really important to me that my work is connected to protecting our public lands. I'm working on a project this summer where we will be focusing on endangered places that are threatened right now. And I'll be taking a few other artists around and producing these works in these places and then handing them over to conservation groups.
Oh, how cool is that? Is that here in Colorado?
It'll probably just be all over the American West. If there's any huge corporate sponsors out there that want to get a hold of me, we could just open it up worldwide.
You can always dream, can't you? That's important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, best of luck to you, Sarah Ewell, and thanks for coming in. Stay with us. It's the Express Yourself Show on KDNK. We're back. It's 4:44, and this is the Express Yourself Show on KDNK. Dance Initiative brings another New York dancer to town next week for the first residency of 2017, and Peter Gilbert of the Dance Initiative is here to tell us all about it. Welcome back, Peter.
Thank you, Luke. It's nice to be back.
Happy New Year.
And to you, too.
Is it a good year for dance?
I think so. You know, it's we're just talking when I came in that 2016 just ended, and all of a sudden we're right in the middle of 2017. And actually making plans for 2018.
Do you have to plan that far out?
For some things. We do get some support from the National Endowment for the Arts. Whole different subject there that we need
so that
to talk
about
sometime.
So that might be endangered, huh?
But through various organizations here in Colorado, the WESTAF, which is the Western States Arts Foundation, and so we have to apply for grant money that... You know, their year is September to September. So starting now, we start applying for grants to bring artists like Christiana Axelson, who's coming here this week. And we just have to think about it now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you planned this residency last year because you're looking for grant support for it.
Actually, this one, we're kind of supporting ourselves. But Christiana is a very special person to Dance Initiative.
How so?
Well, I met her at a wedding of a Carbondale resident, Dana Ellis, who had her wedding up in Missouri Heights at the old schoolhouse. And Christiana was a classmate of Dana's in college. And they danced together back then. And while Dana went on to get her degree and became an architect, Christiana continued to dance and dance professionally. So I have this habit of looking for dancers. And so when I heard that Christiana was a dancer and still working and performing, I found my way to sit next to her. And I don't think I was more than 3 feet away from her for the rest of the afternoon. And we became good friends. And I get back to New York on a fairly regular basis. And Christiana would join me to go to various events. And she started to introduce me to choreographers and artists that she had worked with or were contemporaries. And so Christiana became Dance Initiative's first national advisor. She's on what we call our National Board of Advisors. So that's the short story anyway.
So you go to New York scouting talent, so to speak.
I am a New Yorker still. I've lived in Carbondale now for full time since 1993. But I was born in Manhattan in New York City and lived there all my life until my wife decided that we were going to live here. And since she's sort of won every argument, if we did argue, I don't remember arguing about this one, but so I followed. But I still have this strong attachment to New York City, and I get back there for business a few times a year, and still got family that live on the East Coast, and a daughter lives in Brooklyn, so I get back there fairly regularly. Christiana started to introduce us to other artists, and we had one of them here, not this past year, but the year before, Melissa Fenley. And Christiana was actually working with Melissa. She was in her company. And so Christiana came here as part of that residency in 2015. And so she's familiar with the Launchpad Studios, where she has to stay for a week, and the town of Carbondale. And, of course, she's got her best friend Dana here. So it was logical at some point that we just invite Christiana to come and enjoy a residency and create work. So we're very excited about it because she's a known person, and she's a wonderful artist, performer, and choreographer. So,
and the intention is new work.
New work. That's the mission that we give to every artist that comes. Yeah, we want Carbondale, as it is now and will be on an increasing basis, to be the place where things are created. And since our mission is to support dance and dancers and choreographers, we want Carbondale to be where dance is created. And yes, we'll present it here, and maybe it's a work in progress, which we'll be presenting Saturday on the 4th of February in the afternoon, late afternoon. So we'll see the work that's in progress, but hopefully Christiana will take it and polish it up and perform it back in New York or somewhere else.
And is this a solo piece or is it an ensemble piece? Or do you know?
Well, that's where it gets even more exciting because Christiana, she was invited to come, and she said yes. And then we started talking about it, and she said, well, are there any dancers who would like to work with me in Carbondale? And I said, yes, I know there are some dancers that would like that, but I think most of them are involved in the Carbondale Arts Green is the New Black fashion show, which has incorporated dance as kind of a link between all the lines that are presented. And so, yes, it turned out that dancers are busy. So I started thinking what else I could offer Christiana. And so I went to an artist who was here last year, Meg Madoran, who worked with local dancers last year, but is also a performer and lived and performed in New York and actually worked with Christiana on a number of occasions. And so I asked Meg, would you like to come up and work with Christiana? And it turned out that Meg thought, yes, she could do that for a few days, and now it's turned out she can spend the whole week. So Christiana will have Meg, and then I said, well, if I've got one person, I might as well have another person. And we asked this other artist, Sumi Clements, who also performed in New York, also knew Christiana and Meg, so all three of them have worked together from time to time. And Sumi is spending some time in New York, where she has a dance company, and also in Colorado, where she's teaching and working here. And we had considered SUMMI for a residency later this year, but schedules being what they are, we couldn't confirm that. So I asked SUMMI if she would come and spend a week working with Christiana, and she said, sure, it'd be great. So we have these three fabulous artists who all have danced professionally and continue to dance professionally and know each other, but are very different artists. And here we have a chance to put them all together in the launch pad and see what happens.
So it's real experimental.
Yeah, it's really.
How would you describe Christiana's dancing?
She is very truly a contemporary dancer. While she is trained in ballet and has beautiful feet and she can point her feet and all that, she's truly modern. The people she's worked with, whether it's Melissa Fenley, Pam Tanowitz, or Beth Gill, these choreographers have explored the modern genre, and she's worked with them, and that's her style.
Contemporary dance. It's a language I'm not familiar with, but I know that it. Let's see. The roots go back. Where does modern dance come from? Does it come from Mercy Cunningham? Is it all from there?
No, it's way before that.
Before that,
people can go back to Isadora Duncan and things like areas that were explored. But there are lots of different branches, and I suppose contemporary dance is a big category, encompasses all different genres of dance. Modern dance is sort of one. There's postmodern, and Luke, I'll readily admit that I'm still a student of dance, and so I'm probably not the right person to ask about the history. What I do know is that I absolutely live to watch these people who truly can communicate with their bodies, and I'll roll around and move with the classes at the launch pad from time to time, and I just appreciate the skill and the art of not just Christiana, but many, many dancers that have been through the launch pad, or local dancers that are really quite talented.
Well, I, for one, am thankful that you like to do that, because a lot of us in this town benefit from that. So thank you.
Well, I hope the town appreciates it, because, yes, it's work, and it is a passion, and I will continue to do it even if only a few people like it, because I really do enjoy it. And I think people who come and see the work that's created there, or the presentations that we do from time to time, they all walk away impacted, and that's our mission.
That's so cool. And I guess it means a lot to your organization to have a home.
That Launch has been pack. Truly special. We looked for a number of years for studio space, and were turned down in a few places, and things didn't work out. And then when the old library came up, and we partnered with Carbondale Arts and renovated it and created a space that truly is magnificent. And the artists that come from New York, Christiana walked in there a year and a half ago when she came with Melissa Fenley, and they just can't believe that they can work in a space that's that beautiful. So we're very lucky.
Peter Gilbert, thank you so much for informing us and delighting us with your passion and your efforts.
Thank you, Luke, and everybody. If you have a chance on Saturday afternoon, the 4th, I think 5 o'clock, or come by the launch pad and watch Christiana and her companions perform.
All righty, next weekend, another great. Not this weekend, but next weekend. There we go. Got it right. Okay, that brings to the end another Express Yourself. Thank you for listening, and please remember to go out there and express yourself.